Joining us now is political analyst Dr. Rolf Mateja. Doctor, good morning. Welcome to 702.
Good morning, Ray, and good morning to 702 listeners. Pleasure talking to you.
A rocky start. I mean, how do you see this playing out?
I mean, it's a rocky start. And when you hear that a conference is being interdicted and they put it together in the 11th hour and then it gets stopped and people vote at 2 a.m., we have been to many ANC conferences. All of this thing means that the stakes are quite high. It actually says that the dividing line between the slaves is too sharp, that there is a great deal of anxiety regarding the result. You know, when you go to a conference, you spend a whole lot of time on the credentials. You are looking at who is eligible to vote. Therefore, you know that who is eligible to vote, it is giving you how the conference will most likely end. So it becomes a dispute because when that someone is questioning who is eligible and you are opposing parties also, you end up spending a lot of time on that because you know once you have dealt with that, you know the outcome of the conference. If you look at this conference, it is the contest of the outcome. I won't be surprised if someone goes to court and want to say that it was not procedural and so forth, because I don't think it will produce winners. It will produce winners and losers. That's not the problem.
It's quite concerning, though, because this is the leadership of the Eastern Cape, and come tomorrow morning and thereafter, they need to lead that province. That's a major problem for governance, I would think, because if you get yourself into that situation where you're so busy fighting, there's no local governance.
Indeed, Ray. I mean, if you listen carefully, I was speaking to a couple of journalists leading into this conference. Hardly do you talk about maybe the world view of the leader, what they stand for, integrity, and so forth. But you find yourself very deep in a debate, very deep in a discussion, and you say, wait a minute, I'm discussing personalities here. I have not gotten to what they stand for. All of this seems not to connect with the reality of governance, as you are saying, on the ground. Because you look at the Eastern Cape, you look at how they fared as a provincial government during the management of the COVID, of the pandemic funds and so forth. They did not come so well. These are the issues that should be dividing features that tell us to distinguish other these contesting leaders. But they don't come out. It's all about national leaders. It appears to me that this conference is just for proxy wars. It's never really about what's going on the ground there.
Yeah. All right, then, what does this mean for President Cyril Ramaphosa? Because, of course, he's looking to be re-elected come December. If you see Madikizela, say, for instance, come out tops, what does this mean for him?
Well, it's not going to be an easy sale for President Ramaphosa. And I think that, Ray, if you look at the Eastern Cape, you look at Madikizela coming out, and you start saying that, okay, it means maybe it's a blow for Ramaphosa. I think you need to be looking at other provinces as well. My view here is that I have never seen ANC provinces so fragmented. They are like mini states on their own in terms of what they're expecting from the national conference of their own party. It's going to be quite difficult to reconcile what will be needed by the Bopo with the Eastern Cape. So, in a sense, it gives us a sense that it's going to be a highly, highly emotional and contested conference, that they will most likely spend a day or so on the credentials. But look at other provinces as well. All of these things bring more and more opportunity as provinces are bargaining for what they want from that conference.
I just want to look at that national conference, because you're quite right. If you see what's happening in Mpumalanga now, the Eastern Cape, but then also talking Zweli Mkhize. Now, his former friends turning against him in the Digital Vibe saga, his credibility once again torpedoed. Where can he go now? Does he still have leverage to get himself out of this?
I mean, he seems to be trying to fight back. I mean, the day that Parliament said that he did not violate any ethics is the very same day that the SIU said they wanted to go after the assets of his family. So you look at all of this thing going, pulling opposite direction, that there is some level of reprieve elsewhere. He's still managing to get a stage. He's showing up in Eastern Cape, I mean, and also in KZN as well, no doubt about it. And you look at in all of this, it shows you that there are those that are going to stage a pushback. And if you look at this conference in terms of CR and the RET, you're going to finish very quickly, Ray, and you are not going to get anywhere. You need to understand different leaders who need to survive the difficulties that they are personally facing, and it's pushing them to get so much involved in these regional conferences as they try to broker power to make sure that they remain somewhere else within the top six. It's a good hedge to be within the top six because politically, effectively, you can push back against some of the maneuvers within the party that could result in you even being prosecuted. Right?
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. I suppose, look, it's May now, and as we approach December, we'll get a clearer picture. But what is the pushback looking like against Cyril Ramaphosa?
I mean, you see, the first thing is the president lost some of people who could have been his allies, or he will likely lose some of those people. You see, the problem with this anti-corruption now is that it cuts across sometimes. I mean, Dr. Zelim Khize was within the health department. I would not say he was a detractor to President Ramaphosa by then. He's someone whom you can say almost gravitated to just being quiet next to the president. It's good to have that someone as not your detractor. But when your anti-corruption starts hitting to a point where you lose some of your allies, whose survival then requires that they stand opposing.
Mm.
You see, that's a double loss. You lost people who could have potentially been allies. Now they are forced to be standing on the other side to push against what they see as your political agenda, which is obliterating their political fortune. So that's where the complexity this is. I mean, you look at President Ramaphosa's relationship with Dikoto, for example. And you look at the Zondo report. This is the allies that you lose because of the circumstances. And they find themselves, sometimes they might end up with people that have been your detractors. At all, this conference is so multidimensional. But I think if there is anything key about it, Ray, it is political survival. People are desperate. They will find themselves in very, maybe unsavory corners in order to survive politically.
I think what many of us South Africans fail to understand is why the president doesn't take action. Ndiwe Sisulu, after she sort of turned on the president, that was one. Now we have Zizi Kodwa as well, who's implicated, like you said, with EOH. But you wonder why will the president take action against him, because he is a deputy minister. And if not, is this all about politics and never mind the country?
I mean, Ray, we have a case study. How long did it take for the president to decide on the position of Dr. Zelim Khize, despite digital vibe scandal coming out left and right and more revelations coming out about the details of the transactions thereof? If you look at that situation, you cannot push those people that you don't want to have as enemies or as their detractors. So what do? You just wait for the situation to conspire to a point where it becomes inevitable to let them go. You become the perfect Pontius Pilate. And I think for me, that is exactly the presidency of President Ramaphosa. He never takes a position, but he waits for events to conspire to a point where a decision is inevitable and everybody understands we all go home.
Yeah. All right, final question. Where does that then leave the credibility of the ANC? We have a national election in 2 years' time. Where does the ANC stand with us in the eyes of South Africans?
My worry, Ray, is that looking at the Eastern Cape, looking at the Tekwini, what happened, looking at Mpumalanga, I've got a sense that the ANC still want to indulge. The ANC still think it has a space to maneuver. Because in the Eastern Cape, I don't see or hear any message, even within the across the two factions of the slate, the message that actually comforts South Africans to say, while we are having these factional battles, we still think they are a priority. There is nothing in these conferences that actually says the ANC is listening to South Africans. Actually, the last two conferences, the Mpumalanga and the Ethiopian region, there's actually been offensive on the nation, actually, if you look at it. So these conferences, they're internal processes of the ANC, and at times I don't even know how much to say about them.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. An interesting discussion. And also, it's up to us South Africans. Are we going to take this? Do we want to take this? And what do we think about it? Political analyst Dr. Rolf Motekga, thank you so much for taking the time to come on to 702 this morning.